Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. A week ago, we introduced you to the first ever New York City Television Festival. A week later, hear all about Tinseltown, the festival's first choice for Best Television Series. Producer and director David Barry joins me next. From there, we spotlight a Sundance Television miniseries that revisits one of the most horrific tragedies of the 20th century, Jonestown. Terror in the Jungle unfolds next weekend, and our guide, executive producer, Jeff Gwynn. Also ahead, our classic trivia question this week, and Tracy Morgan's key to Brooklyn. Believe me, it was a very special event this morning. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker, and present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later this half hour. 51 degrees at the top of this hour, and we welcome you on this Friday afternoon to the latest edition of the program All About Television. Happy to have you aboard wherever you're catching us. Some wonderful guests coming your way over the next hour, and we invite you, as always, to be part of the program. It's so simple. Pick up the phone, raise your voice, and dial in. Here's the number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The numbers get anywhere you're catching us across the country and around the world here on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. Our chat room is open for business and ready for you. It's SimonApple04 by name, and you will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And, of course, while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk or Spreaker screen, follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. David Barry from Tinseltown will be live with us from West Hollywood after these news note quickies. Former NBC overseer Warren Littlefield is extending his Fox 21 Studios relationship another few years. He currently executive produces Fargo for FX and the Emmy-winning The Handmaid's Tale on Hulu. Season 6 of The Blacklist will premiere on NBC January 4th. A year-long, multi-hour special, this one with adopted pets in the background, will run on Hallmark Movies and Mysteries Thanksgiving Eve and Day. And the annual People's Choice Awards moves from CBS to NBC CBS to E this Sunday night. Other NBC Universal Long networks are expected to simulcast a live special from Hollywood. That includes Bravo, USA Network, Sci-Fi, and in Spanish, Universo. And that is news notes for today. And now joining me live from West Hollywood, California, is the first ever winner of the first ever New York City Television Festival, which happened here in the Big Apple a week ago. The show is called Tinseltown, and our guest, producer and co-director, David Barry. David, thanks for being here.
Simon, hi. Thank you so much for having me on.
It is a pleasure. You've had a week to think about this. What do you think about the fact that you're the first ever winner of this category of Best TV Series for the latest addition to the TV Festival circuit?
Oh, gosh. I have to be honest with you. It's a week out, and myself, Michael, who is the co-director, Amy Lynn Chadwick, who is the lead, we're all still reeling. It was a huge surprise. It was a huge honor. We're still sort of smiling from the whole thing. It's been amazing.
Hey, for those who don't know, Michael is the acclaimed director, Michael Lindsay Hogg. I believe he's an Emmy-nominated a time or two, and we'll talk about his contribution to the program in a moment. But first of all, how did you get picked for the festival?
I entered the festival. I submitted through a film portal called Film Freeway, so free plug for them.
And what I think a lot of people will be surprised to know is that this is not a case of a pilot. This is the case of a TV series that's actually been on the air for several seasons. How long have you been on the air and where?
We've been on the air for 3 seasons. We're about to launch a bonus season. We started off on the YouTube platform, and I didn't particularly like the way their algorithm was treating the show. It's really not meant for scripted weekly TV shows. So we took a little bit of a break, retooled, replanned, and then launched the show on its very own website, Tinseltown.com, where it's been living ever since.
Mm-hmm. We'll talk about whether it will come back on television in some manner in a moment. But first, how did this program get started? What led to the creation?
You know, it's one of those things that started out as something completely different from what it wound up becoming. I had wrote a television pilot a few years ago. It's how I met Michael Lindsay Hogg. Back in the day, they used to call it a backdoor pilot. It was a two-hour pilot for television, a comedy drama called The Lullaby League. And the story revolved around a group of older actresses, veteran Hollywood actresses, who've all sort of fallen on harder times and have found themselves living together in kind of a nursing home, although I don't like to refer to it that because it conjures up some negative image. But they share a home together, and their lives are kind of upturned when a young reality star sensation is sentenced to do community service in their home, and that reality star is Tinsel. So what had happened is Michael and I had a reading of the Lullaby League at Strasbourg here in L.A. It did really, really well. It was the first time anything of mine had appeared on stage. For anybody who doesn't know, Michael is an experienced Broadway director. He did Agnes of God. He did the original production of The Normal Heart at the Public Theater. He was nominated for a Tony for Whose Life Is It Anyway? So to have him there was extraordinary. And he and I did the casting and were lucky enough to find some amazingly talented people. The problem was, even though the audience's reaction was fantastic, especially from a writer's point of view. I mean, everybody laughed on cue, they cried on cue. It really couldn't have been better. The people who had the money were sort of adamant about the fact that no one wants to watch a show about older people, which I think is wrong from a business standpoint, and I think it's been proven so by shows like Grace and Frankie, which are huge successes. But long story made a little bit shorter, I took the youngest character from the show, which is Tinsel, rewound the clock, and sort of filmed this other show, which asks the question, who is this young woman who wants to become a reality star? So in that sense, it's a prequel to this other project that I had written a couple years ago. Hope that makes sense.
David, when did you start creating episodes? Around what time did you get the first season going?
I think the first episodes appeared, it's such a blur, because we were a little bit in production and then it took some time for a post. In 2016, we put our first episodes up on YouTube. And it did very, very well on YouTube. We had over 1.5 million views. I have to really mention Emilyn Chadwick, who's the lead. She had 125 pages of monologue to memorize, and the entire show is on her shoulders. So when we were filming, everything was in service to her and the character. But so after the first year, we decided that YouTube wasn't the right place for it, and we found a different home for it.
You're hearing David Barry. He is the producer, creator, and co-director of Tinsel Town. It's the first ever Best TV Series winner of the first ever New York City Television Festival. It was held at the Dolby Screening Room on the corner of 55th Street and 6th Avenue in Midtown Manhattan last weekend. Roberto Rizzo, who is the originator of the festival, was on our show a week ago today. And now we have the winner of one of the categories on our program today. We're talking about Tomorrow Be Televised. David joins us live from West Hollywood, California this half hour. This is Tomorrow Be Televised. Glad to have you with us on this Friday afternoon. If you have a question or comment for David, make the call 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Big 90-minute episode coming your way. We'll be coming your way next on Monday afternoon. First up, BET's brand-new miniseries, The Family Business, with Ernie Hudson as star and executive producer. We will have the two people who produced the program, one of whom is also the author, Carl Weather and Nikaya Brown. Then, maybe the most unique and most controversial scripted series we have highlighted on this program all year. It's premiering next week on Hulu. It's called The Bisexual. It was produced here in New York, and we will have executive producer Naomi Del Pere. And finally, after 3 weeks, We will finally have, I promise, so does she, Joan Sovman, the popular digital media writer for CNNews.com. We'll talk about a story she broke this week, like Comcast, coming up with a smart TV app that will allow you to control a lot of things around your home or apartment. And we'll also talk about what's ahead for Netflix, Hulu, and the new service that Walt Disney announced, finally gave the name to yesterday, and that is Disney Plus. So that's all coming up Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And guess what, David? We have a call. We're going to take it. Hello, you're on Tomorrow Be Televised.
Hello.
What's your name and where are you calling from?
Is that me?
Yes, that's you. You're on the air.
Is that Amy?
Oh, sorry. I don't know what's happening. Hi, I'm Amy. I'm calling from Utah right now.
This is
Amy, welcome aboard. You're on the line with David Barry from Tinseltown. Go ahead.
David Barry, you're my favorite human ever.
You're my favorite human also.
Yay.
Just by way of intro, this is Amy Lynn Chadwick. She played the lead, and she was the recipient of the Best Lead Actress Award at the festival.
That's right. You also won the award, Amy, and welcome aboard.
I did. So exciting. I was, like, so stoked about that.
Amy won the Best Lead Actress part.
Right. And Amy, congratulations. And how did you get the opportunity to be part of the series? Tell us about your side of the story.
Well, I auditioned for it along with how many other girls?
We had 700 applicants. But as
and
soon
I
as Amy walked
all.
In,
no.
she did, hands down. But as soon as Amy walked in, I knew that she was Tinsel. She was sort of what I had in mind when I was writing, personified.
I knew when I read the audition sides the night before, I felt like Tinsel already, so I felt like it would be a good match.
David, what ground rules did you give Amy in terms of her characters? We've had a number of TV series that have explored the theme of, you know, a person trying to make it in Hollywood, man or woman, how to be a star, the road to getting the first role, that kind of thing. And I'm curious what kind of ground rules or what kind of information that you gave or background information that you gave Amy to work on her character. And then I'll get Amy's response to that.
Because we had so many pages to shoot in so few days, there were very little rules. And I think when you go into a production like this, you and your team is lithe and small, there is a trust that you have to have in the people that you're working with. And that's something that we were all lucky enough to enjoy in ourselves and in each other. So Michael and myself both trusted Amy implicitly with her decisions in terms of how to play the character, how to read a particular line. Our first day of shooting, Michael pulled me aside and he whispered in my ear and he said, David, I don't know how, if you know this, but, you know, we're very lucky to have found Amy. Of course, I found Amy, but I let him think we did. But it's true, and you know, I mean, Michael has worked with some of the best actors and actresses out there. But no, there was a lot. Sometimes Amy would ad lib a line, and most times I used that line because it was funny, and she knew the character so well. She became the character, and a lot of what she sort of riffed on, we wound up using.
Amy, what was it like to take this role and make it, not only make it your own, but really make the show your own? As David was saying, all the burden is on you. Yes, you have directors, you have writers, you have cinematographers and so forth, supporting cast. But in the end, it comes across that like the show is about you, and like you have the big burden.
Right. Sorry, I'm having a hard time hearing you guys. I guess the way that I just handled that was not thinking about it. We only had a few short, like a short, how many days? 7 days? 8 days? There's mm-hmm. pages and pages and pages. So I just figured out who she was as a human being and drank a lot of Diet Dr. Pepper. And just dove in. And there was, at most, like, of the time, I felt like I was losing my mind. But looking back at it, those were the funniest moments, I think. because I would throw something, drop something, forget my line, punch myself in the face. It was a process.
Yeah, but it was all. What happened was like these sort of, these moments wound up being sort of the gems that we used when we were editing, because Amy was fully in character when she was doing all this. So
wonderful. Once I put the hair in, I turned into tinsel. Like it was weird.
Yeah,
Jenny Carl had a lot to do with that.
Jenny Carl is
up. Shout out to Jenny Carl.
For both of you, what has it been like to work with somebody like Michael Lindsay Hogg, who, as you said, David, built this wonderful track record of Broadway hits like Agnes of God, and whose life is in any way, and then turned his talents from Broadway to film and television? What did you learn from his style? What's his modus operandi in terms of doing the show?
As a writer, to have someone like Michael take an interest in your writing, and I think his exact words were, "There's something here, David," was a huge honor. And in terms of his working style, he's my role model because he has a lot of expectations, but they are coupled with an enormous amount of trust in the writer and in the actors. So he will always give the actor first dibs at how to read a line or how to play something. And if there's any kind of confusion, then the actor will sort of come to him. But he's the most patient. He's eagle-eyed. I mean, nothing slips by him. He's done, he's directed videos for the Beatles. He's done such a breadth of work that I trust whatever he says.
Amy, I'm sorry, go ahead, David.
No, he also, I think I said it earlier, but he said it to me once. He said that Amy was one of the best actors he's ever worked with and would again in a heartbeat.
How's your character evolved over these three seasons?
She evolved. She there's an arc there. She starts to have a little bit of a meltdown, and it wears on her, and you see that she goes from appearing to be this vapid LA like actress wannabe to actually being kind of smart and intelligent, and you feel bad for her. You start to feel bad for her, and she starts to take a dark turn. Wouldn't you agree, David?
Yeah, I mean, all you need to do is sort of watch the prologue and then the epilogue, and you can see that there's just an enormous difference in the way she begins the story and then the way she ends the story. I mean, she starts the story as this kind of self-confident know-it-all, and she's sort of the lesson there is she's a lonely person, and she doesn't know as much as she thinks she does. So, but she's not incurious. She's very smart. That's the thing.
Right.
She has a curious mind.
Yeah, and it's not difficult to play that type of character because there's a line you don't want to cross because she has to be likable.
Absolutely.
And so I needed to make sure that there was something likable about her while she's saying some kind of racy things at times.
She does.
You can't hate
her.
She's
a little clueless.
Clueless, that's a good way to put it. But if she wasn't likable,
what Amy did better than I think anybody expected her to do was that she pulled out this vast reservoir of vulnerability, and that's where the empathy came from.
You are hearing producer, writer, and co-director. director David Barry and the star of Tinseltown, the first ever New York City Festival winner. That's Amy Lynn Chadwick. You're both joining us live from West Hollywood, California. This half hour on tomorrow will be televised. Simon Applebaum here with you live from New York, other end of the U.S. of A. 51 degrees at the top of the hour. A few more minutes with our guests. And if you'd like to get in with a call or a chat room comment, please do at 646-652-2906 or use that chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Earlier today, Amazon released the second season of its popular series, Patriot, and it's gotten some fantastic reviews, including one from The Hollywood Reporter, which now calls Patriot one of the best new shows of this season. And next Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, the creator executive producer, Stephen Conrad, will join us. And Stephen Conrad from Amazon's Patriot, next Friday, 3:30 Eastern New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. David, since the festival last weekend, have you heard from Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, CBS All Access, any television services about perhaps taking your program?
I have not. So please, tell them to call me. I'm here right now. Tell them to call in.
Call in.
If either of you had your way, which is there a particular service you would like to see your program on?
You know, I'm a fan of Amazon. That would be a dream come true. And then there's also the Lullaby League, which is more content. So the show has somewhere to go in terms of story.
Yeah.
Before we go, what did you learn about being at this first ever festival? This was obviously when you do something that's brand new, like what Roberta Rizzo, the originator festival, is doing. It's a gamble because you have so many TV festivals out there right now, a big circuit, and you're adding on to it. What was being at the festival like, and what did you learn? What was any takeaway from the festival?
I think the takeaway is that sometimes when you cross your fingers, it comes. It wasn't our first festival, but it was the first festival that we swept in this sort of way. So it was very encouraging.
And Amy, what about you?
I'm so sorry. I'm in a place where I cannot hear anything. So I agree with whatever David said. I'm so sorry.
You see why we get along so well?
All right, well,
that was a totally a tinsel moment. I am so sorry.
No problem. And we will leave it there. The program is called Tinseltown, and it said it was the first ever TV series winner for the New York City Television Festival, which hopefully will be back next year. Very successful event this past weekend. By the way, if you want to know more about the festival, here's where you go online, www.newyorkfilmtvfestival.com. That's www.newyorkfilmtvfestival.com. And the big winner of the Best TV Series is Tinseltown, also the Best Actress Award. And Jay, before we go, again, tell people where they can find the episodes right now.
You can find all the episodes, plus some new ones that are coming up at www.tinseltown.com.
There you go. David Barry and Amy Lynn Chadwick, thank you both very much for coming on. Congratulations on your wins last weekend here in New York, and all the very best for more seasons of your program.
Thank you so much, Simon. Thank you to New York City TV Festival. We're so grateful.
It's a pleasure. All the very best. Take care. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, you too.
Take care. You too. David Barry and Amy Lynn Chadwick joining us from West Hollywood, California. Once again, the show is called Tinseltown. You can see it on their website and hopefully maybe down the road on a programming service near you. Again, if you want to know more about the New York City Television Festival, it's www.newyorkfilmtvfestival.com. If you want to catch our episode that we did a week ago with the originator of the festival, Roberta Rizzo, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, or iHeartRadio.com, Spreaker.com, Apple TV's podcast site, and also iTunes. More Tomorrow Be Televised, including our class trivia question of the week coming your way, but first some words from the fine folks at audible.com. In case you haven't heard the last couple of weeks, when you now try to subscribe to a one-month trial and free audiobook of audible.com, you get more. Two additional audiobooks original productions in the new banner Audible Theater. Everything from one-woman, one-man shows, off-Broadway, off-Broadway regional theater plays, original material done especially for Audible. And Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment and information. Over 180,000 titles to choose from, including the original productions in the Audible Theater Library. You can listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing us on right now, at Blog Talk Radio and Speaker, or iHeartRadio. Just all you have to do is sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. And for a limited time only, you not only get one free audiobook and that one-month trial, you get two additional selections from the Audible Theater catalog. That's three audiobooks for one. How about that for a deal? Great Christmas, great Thanksgiving, great Christmas gifts as well. We're getting into the holiday season. An Audible subscription is a marvelous way to celebrate the holiday season and beyond. Remember, Audible will transform the way you hear the world. Want to check it out? Go to audibletrial.com/televised right now. And now it's time for our classic trivia question of the week. We introduced it on Monday's episode. Still no winner so far. And if you are first with the correct answer, you can win the DVD set of the special event coming up this weekend on National Geographic, Inside North Korea's Dynasty, and the best-selling book by David Tice, The Golden Tube. And The Golden Box. Excuse me, that's The Golden Box by David Tice. Here's the question. Remember the Green Hornet television series back in 1966-67? Great show. Van Williams played the popular crime-fighting crusader, not to be associated with Batman. And, of course, Bruce Lee played Kato. That was his big entry into superstardom. Here's the question. What was the Green Hornet's day job? That's right, the Green Hornet, by day, he had a job. What was it? What was the Green Hornet's day job? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Make sure you enclose your name and your full mail address when you email. If you're first with the correct answer, you'll win Inside North Korea's Dynasty, two-night event coming up first this week, November 11th, and then the following week, November 18th. And it's a wonderful DVD set that you will enjoy. Very eye-opening. And you'll also get the new best-selling book, The Golden Box, by David Tice, who was on this show last week. So get into the game here. That's how you do it. Remember, in order to win, you got to be in. So make it happen. Once again, simonapple04@yahoo.com. And if you just missed the question, we'll post it over the weekend on Facebook and on Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, in order to win, be in. Go for it. And all the very best. And we got a lot of great people. You could say some really best super people coming your way on a special trio of Tomorrow Be Televised episodes week after next. That's when Thanksgiving week happens. And we'll be with you Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of that week. That's November 19th, 2021st at a regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. That's Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And already lined up for our pre-Thanksgiving episode of Wednesday, November 21st, is the creator of the brand-new Facebook Watch series, Queen America, starring Catherine Zeta-Jones in her first scripted television series. Creator Megan Oppenheimer will be one of our guests. That's Megan Oppenheimer from Queen America on Facebook Watch, which premieres, by the way, I believe next Friday. She'll be with us on Wednesday, November 21st, New Pacific, our special pre-Thanksgiving Day edition of Tomorrow Be Televised. So don't forget, week after next, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, back-to-back-to-back episodes coming your way. And when we come back, we'll have some thoughts about what Tracy Morgan got to do by getting the key to Brooklyn earlier today. But first, we revisit one of the most horrific events of the last century, Jonestown. Believe it or not, it's been 40 years since that tragedy happened. We will have the executive producer of a new Sundance TV series on that topic, Jeff Gwynn. He'll join us after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com and Spreaker.com, the best internet radio in the universe. More than 30 million subscribers and listeners around the world every month and growing. Don't forget, on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker, you can catch the Julie Tuffy Show. Julie helps you out with fitness and health topics all the time. Every week, the Julie Tuffy Show, various times right here on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. And don't forget, that's BTR's available 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised for this Friday afternoon, November 2018. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. Another super guest coming your way in the half hour ahead, and we invite you to be part of the program. All you have to do to be part of the program is get involved. How? Pick up the phone, put the voice to order, and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. As always, the number is good anywhere you catch us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio and Speaker. And you can also use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. It is amazing to believe that nearly 40 years ago, one of the most horrific tragedies anywhere in the world, in any century, happened. It happened in Jonestown. It was a massacre that claimed the lives of more than 900 people. It is still the greatest single loss U.S. lives before 9/11. And this weekend, and starting on November 17th, that's next weekend, you'll be revisited in a two-night miniseries event on Sundance TV. The program is called Jonestown Terror in the Jungle. Joining us live at Air Media Exclusive is its executive producer, Jeff Gwynn. Jeff, thank you for joining us.
It's a pleasure. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you. And where are you calling us from?
Actually, I am sitting in a car out on 6th Avenue here in New York City, watching the rain come down.
Oh, yes, it is coming down. It's supposed to be with us through tonight, early tomorrow, but hopefully we'll pass us, and then we'll have a pretty good weekend afterwards. So welcome aboard to our town. Good to have you. Jeff, what made you decide that the time was right, besides the fact it's 40 years, it's really hard to believe, that the time was right to revisit such a tragedy?
Well, what I wanted to do is I wanted to look at a time in America when it seemed like the country was just coming apart. We had Watergate. We had certainly the Vietnamese War. All kinds of things were happening. And people were trying to look for a different way to somehow make the world a better place. And I tried to think what sort of epitomized that. And when you look at People's Temple, not just the way it ended, but the way it all began back in the 50s as an effort to try to make society equal for people of every race and gender and economic background. I mean, what happened? Not just what, because certainly over 900 people died, we all remember that day, but how could such a thing happen and why did it happen? That was the story I wanted to tell, and I spent 4 years researching and writing to try to do it.
And this is a story, the story of Jonestown, Jim Jones, the People's Temple, that television brought to life, both before this tragedy happened and when this tragedy happened, on the spot, because it was that unforgettable camera shot of the NBC correspondent who had covered this story, who had done reports for NBC Nightly News, then went to the People's Temple with those 900, and then fell victim with his cameraman and sound person to what happened. It still is extraordinary to think about.
It's extraordinary to think about, but the story gets even more extraordinary when we try to understand not just the implications of that day, but how it came to that. It's a story that goes back almost three decades. It involves everything from the civil rights movement to the Cuban Missile Crisis, to the war in Vietnam, to the attempted assassination of Castro by the CIA. It was a very paranoid time, and people forget that. And you're right, Simon, that TV seemed to make it so immediate, but there's a problem with that, too. TV is just a series of quick glimpses, and a lot of the glimpses gave the wrong impression. Everything from the fact it wasn't Kool-Aid that they drank that day to the fact that it wasn't mass suicide, that as many as a third of those folks were actually held down, forcibly injected with poison, and murdered. So America got a glimpse that day. We got a saying, don't drink the Kool-Aid. But never really the whole story, all the complex details of it. And that's what we're trying to do here. Not just to retell something that happened 40 years ago, but to show the parallels with modern times. I mean, we're having a lot of the same things happen again.
How do you connect such dots? Did you go in thinking that Jonestown had any connection with events that happened way before, like the Cuban Missile Crisis and so on, or how did, and if that wasn't the case, how did those dots get connected?
Well, what you have to do when you're writing about history is go in admitting how completely ignorant you are of the facts. One of my jokes is always that my ignorance has been one of my best tools as an author. If you go in already thinking you know everything that happened, then you're not going to look hard. You're not trying to write a book about history. You're trying to write a book that backs up what you've already decided you want to believe. So I started at the beginning, the rural parts of Indiana where Jim Jones was born, and I tried to follow his whole life and the development of People's Temple. I went everywhere he went, up to including the jungles of Guyana, where it's overgrown Jonestown, and I had to cut my way in with machetes with the help of a couple guys. But that's when you start to put the pieces together. I think the important lesson here is history never happens in a vacuum. Everything is connected somehow. And it's up to the historian to try to find out the connections and present them to the reader.
You're hearing Jeff Gwynn. He is the executive producer and the author of Jonestown, Terror in the Jungle. It's the brand new Sundance TV miniseries that will premiere next weekend, November 17th, 19th, 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. Jeff Gwynn is live here in New York in a car, traveling around our fair city. This half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. Simon Abraham, also with you in New York, 51 degrees at the top of the hour. Glad you're with us this Friday afternoon. Have a question or comment for our guest? Make the call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Again, coming up on Monday's episode, we will have the people who put together the new BET miniseries, The Family Business. We're talking about Carl Weber and Nikia Brown. They're both executive producers on this program, which stars Ernie Hudson. You know him from Ghostbusters, Hand That Rocked the Cradle, other shows as well, and movies too. And he's also serving as executive producer on this very interesting crime thriller. Also, from maybe one of the most controversial scripted television series to come out this year, The Bisexual, premieres next weekend on Hulu. We'll have executive producer Naomi DePen. And we promised you last week, we promised you this week and the week before, but finally, Joan Selzman, the popular senior digital media writer for CNNnews.com, will finally join us. I promise she does too. It's all coming up, 90th edition of our program, next Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific here. On Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Jeff, when did you start doing the research, and how much research erupted from that?
Well, I started almost 5 years ago now, and I started in Indiana, and I went every place that Jim Jones did. You have to follow through on things as they occur. The reason I cited all those different events is that Jim Jones built his church by starting out encouraging folks active in the civil rights movement in the 50s to join him. I mean, his first followers were mostly black ghetto dwellers in Indianapolis. He expanded his church into an integrated sort of congregation by going out on the revival circuit, cooking up acts that made it look as though he was reviving the dead and physically removing cancers. If you've ever wondered how these shysters do that, I actually write about in the book how they do those tricks, and it's in the docuseries, so they'll get to see that. He then took up in the 1960s out in California with the whole political liberal movement, bought into that, got a lot of young yuppies, professionals. And all the time he's using events of the day to make his followers paranoid. You've got to be in this church because we're trying to combat all these terrible things that are happening, whether it's the threat of nuclear war with the Soviets, whether after Kent State it's the shooting down by the National Guard of students, see the government will kill you if you try to protest. He very cleverly used the events of the day to convince each of his followers in one way or another that they personally were in danger and that Jim Jones was the only protection they had. So he did this over a period of decades. It wasn't a matter of a bunch of feeble-minded fools following an obvious insane person. His followers were some of the most intelligent, socially committed people that you ever met in this or any other generation. And what you have to do if you're writing such a book is go back out there and do the legwork and find these people. One of the things I think your audience members will especially enjoy about this series on Sundance TV is we found folks still living, including some who were in Jonestown that day when these terrible events took place. And they get a chance to explain what it was about Jim Jones and People's Temple that attracted them and held them for all those years, up to the point where so many were willing to follow him right into death.
One thing I've always wondered, Jeff, about this situation is why, of all the places in the world to establish the People's Temple, did Jim Jones pick Guyana? What about that country or that countryside said to him, this is where I want to establish my kingdom?
Well, I'll tell you, I had that same question in my mind when I found myself 37 years later in the Guyanese jungle, which is one of the densest and most poisonous reptiles infested in the world. People's Temple actually was established for many years in the United States. And its headquarters, just before Jonestown, was in San Francisco. Jones had originally planned Jonestown in Guyana on the South American coast as sort of an offshoot program, that a couple hundred members of People's Temple would clear an area in the jungle, establish a farm, grow crops, and then distribute those crops to hungry individuals and nations in South America, making People's Temple global rather than just American. But back in San Francisco in the mid-1970s, there were suddenly some great investigative reported articles that showed a lot of the conditions in People's Temple that were horrible. Members were being beaten if they disagreed with Jones. Families were being separated. Money was being used in inappropriate ways. And so what was supposed to be a little settlement in the Guyanese jungle to house maybe 300-400 people suddenly had 1,000 people living there when Jim Jones fled the States along with most of his followers. So they were in this jungle where they had never intended to be. But it had its advantages. The jungle is far removed from any civilization in that area. Georgetown, the capital of Guyana, is 150 miles away. There's no roads through the jungle. You're effectively isolated. And so there Jim Jones was with 1,000 of his followers, and Jones, who's increasingly paranoid and using drugs, harangues them every night with stories of how there's new concentration camps opening up in America where all black citizens are going to be put, or that the CIA has hired mercenaries to come into the jungle and slaughter everyone in Jonestown. You got to remember, they had very little contact with the outside world. Jim Jones's voice is all they're able to hear. So this was never a long-term plan to end up in the jungle. It was just an emergency when Jim Jones had to get the hell out of the States, and that was the only place that he could find refuge.
The going philosophy is that everybody who was in Guyana was slaughtered, the more than 900. Are you saying now that there were people in Jonestown that day that survived and you were able to, you and the production team for this program were able to find them?
Yes. About a half dozen people survived that day. A couple folks who walked out of Jonestown sneaked away from the guards when all the terrible things were taking place. Three men, including Tim Carter, who contributed to this series, folks are going to be able to watch and listen as Tim Carter tells the whole story, the inside view, who were plucked out of line by Jones to run an errand for him to take money through the jungle to the Soviet embassy. And Tim Carter, by the way, before he did that, had to watch his 14-month-old son and his wife die from ingesting the poison. I mean, he was there for this whole horrible thing. There was also an old woman named Hyacinth Thrash who was asleep on her cot when everyone was gathered in the pavilion at Jonestown to die. And people thought that she'd just taken the poison and had crawled off there. In fact, she was just asleep. So we actually have eyewitness accounts of what happened that day. Even people who think they know the whole story of People's Temple in Jonestown, when they watch this, they're going to see and hear things that are just going to astonish them.
How willing were these survivors to face you and your cameras and relive such unspeakable horror? I mean, to go back 40 years and to, like, take us as eyewitnesses to what they witnessed, there are probably very few words you can use to describe that.
To them showing such courage, and that's what it takes. I mean, they had to summon up the nerve to be able to go back and describe all this again and again. But they did it because they want to help people understand what really happened. I mean, let's face it, almost everybody who remembers Jonestown now remembers the knockoff phrase, "Don't drink the Kool-Aid." And it wasn't even Kool-Aid. It was a cheap imitation Kool-Aid called Flavor-Aid. But they want everyone to understand better, not just what happened to them, but how a demagogue, and Jim Jones was a demagogue, always uses certain tools to pull followers in. Because that's why Jonestown still is important today. If we really look at what happened there, maybe it helps us understand better how demagogues operate. We can identify them a little better and maybe resist them more forcefully. Because American society has always been vulnerable to demagogues. You know, Jonestown happened and it's horrible, but unless we learn from it, it's at some point obviously going to happen again.
This program, Jonestown, Tearing the Gunwale, has got some big people behind it, like Leonardo DiCaprio and his Appian Way production company, like Stephen David, who we've had a number of times in this program with some of the more interesting drama docu-series specials and miniseries that have come on television in recent years. So that's the level of talent you have on this program. And we are speaking with the executive producer and author, Jeff Gwynn. The program, by the way, premieres next weekend, November 17th and 18th, on Sundance Television, 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time, both installments. And incidentally, there's a podcast that also goes along with this. We'll talk about that in a little bit. Jeff joins us live from New York this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Applebaum with you live from the Big Apple. Happy you're with us as we get ready for, hopefully, not a rainy weekend, just a rainy night and a little bit of Saturday morning. And if you have a question or comment or remaining minutes with our guest, make the call 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And coming up, Tracy Morgan of The Last OG and Saturday Night Live and 30 Rock had a very special thing happen to him this morning to celebrate his 50th birthday. He got the key to Brooklyn. If you think it was a run-of-the-mill event at Brooklyn Borough Hall this morning, you're very much mistaken. And it's a good reason to be mistaken. Say about that shortly. Jeff, how are these people living since? How have they lived since returning from Guyana?
Jim Jones always was able to attract a wide variety of personalities, and the people who survived all this have gone in a lot of different ways. You've got some exceptionally successful business people. You've got people who went into medicine and social work. You've got some folks who have fought the ghosts of Jonestown for 40 years and have never quite recovered. It's a complex sort of thing. They considered themselves a rainbow, by which they mean mixed gender, mixed race congregation, and they've sort of had mixed results with their lives. But the thing that just is striking is how all these years later, they still consider themselves family. They squabble sometimes, but they're together. And in fact, next weekend, they're all going to gather in Oakland, California, at the mass grave of many of the Jonestown victims. They convene on an annual basis to not just mourn the dead, but to celebrate all the good things that People's Temple accomplished and a chance to visit with each other again. And I think because of a podcast that Sundance Television has arranged, viewers will even be able to share in that if they would like to.
And this podcast is hosted by Amanda Knox, and it's going to also start next weekend, and it's going to continue into December.
Well, I think it's important that viewers, that people in your audience get a chance to see the whole picture. This is the whole idea of trying to do this series, is to demonstrate not just what happened, but that these are people just like you and me. They all wanted to make the world a better place. They weren't all foggy-eyed fanatics. Instead, People's Temple, back in the States before Jones took them all to the jungle, had wonderful social outreach programs. They had drug rehabilitation programs, marriage counseling, free food and clothing. They even took ghetto kids, sent them to college, and paid not only tuition but all their living expenses and food, room, board, everything. They did some wonderful things. So even when Jim Jones was gradually becoming stranger and stranger, they could still say, well, you know, Jim is getting kind of weird, but People's Temple itself is accomplishing great things. It's quite a complex story.
Before we go, what was it like to work with people like Leonardo DiCaprio and Stephen David, who have done a lot of film and television work, and to have everybody sort of on the same mindset to make this program work?
You know, there are some people who are so incredibly talented that when you work with them, they somehow make you feel a little bit smarter and more creative yourself. I've learned a lot, and the best part of it is when a lot of the Jonestown survivors have already gotten a chance to see the first couple episodes, and they believe it's honest and real, and it tells the story in a way it's never been told before. And Stephen David in particular, Shan Nicholson, the director, certainly Leonardo, these are honorable folks that really want to get the truth out there, and with this docuseries, I think they've done that in a tremendously impressive way.
A very revelatory experience coming to Sundance Television on the 40th anniversary of, again, one of the most horrific events maybe in the 20th century. Maybe not maybe, just there. Jonestown, Terror in the Jungle, premieres next weekend, November 17th, 19th, 9:30 Pacific Time on Sundance Television, available on cable and satellite all over the country. And then next month will be available on Sundance Now, which is through smart TV sets and smart TV devices. Check out where Sundance TV, an AMC network, is available in your area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program online and more details about the podcast called The Truth About True Crime, hosted by Amanda Knox, here's where you go, www.sundancetv.com. www.sundancetv.com. Whatever you think about Jonestown, whether you saw the Guy Trying to Be movie that Powers Booth won the Emmy Award for his very chilling portrayal of Jim Jones, I think you're going to find this program very, very revelatory. And it will definitely give you the full 10 yards about what happened at that fateful time to those people at Jonestown. Jeff Quinn, the executive producer and author, thank you again for joining us. Good luck with the special and the podcast, and all the very best to you in whatever future TV you do.
I really have enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
Same here, and have a fantastic weekend. Take care.
Bye.
Jeff Quinn, executive producer and author of Jonestown, Terror of the Jungle, coming next weekend on Sundance Television and the following month on Sundance Now. And now a comment. Keys to the City, or Keys to the Borough ceremonies, can be a dime a dozen. But not the one that took place this morning at Brooklyn Borough Hall. Not the one that involved Tracy Morgan, the former co-star of Saturday Night Live, Emmy winner for 30 Rock, car accident in New Jersey. And this year, the star and executive producer of The Last OG on TBS, coming back for a second season next year. No, it was not the normal run-of-the-mill Keys to the City ceremony. I was there, and I can tell you that a lot of people were moved and inspired by what Brooklyn Borough President Eric Adams had to say about Morgan, and Morgan had to say about his life and what he's done with it. You see, Tracy Morgan was not just being honored for what he did with The Last OG. That would have been enough, because The Last OG is produced in Brooklyn. He plays somebody who gets out of prison, comes back to his neighborhood, who finds it gentrified and tries to live with it. But it was for all the things that he has done that you don't know about. Things like, for example, raising money for various charities. Or going to Gowanus House, the basketball court there, and doing his best refurbishment. That's where, by the way, The Last OG was filmed. Or, for example, having a block party for the community in Marcy Playground. or working with the Fortune Society to discuss the organization's advocacy efforts to reform the criminal justice system. You haven't heard much about Tracy Morgan doing that because he's kept it to himself. But it was great to see that it was brought out in the open today. And Eric Adams, the Brooklyn Borough President, I think said it beautifully. How do you turn pain, the pain of that accident several years ago, into purpose? This brother did. And when you're with him, it's not different, no different, than when you hang out with him in the steps of Tompkins Avenue in Brooklyn. This is a solid, solid brother from the inside out. Adams was saying those words, I saw Morgan weep with his wife and child. You could see when he came up to the podium that there were tears streaming down, one tear at a time. He was so moved, and he had the audience moved as well. At one point, he said, all the OGs here, this is service to you. I'm a complicated man, he said this to his wife, and you understand me. It was really moving. No, it wasn't your typical deal. And one thing you got was that Tracy Morgan had a lot of heart and a lot of soul, in public and in private. Yes, it was not your run-of-the-mill event at Brooklyn Borough Hall this morning at 11 o'clock. There may be some TV coverage. I know that Channel 11 WPX was there and some other stations and two. And it may get some play around the country. But I just want to let you know that it was a very moving event. It wasn't your run-of-the-mill for a very simple reason. Because not only did Tracy Morgan get the key to the borough opened its soul to him because Morgan did it first. Good as any reason, maybe better than most, to have a key to what you work with your life to accomplish in the borough that has been your home from birth on. Way to go, Tracy. And happy to hear that the last OG will be back in that borough next year. Next Monday on Tomorrow We Televised, 90-minute show for you. We will have the executive producer behind the new BET miniseries, The Family Business, Carl Weber and Ikiah Brown. Then, from one of the most controversial scripted series to come on this year, from Hulu, the bisexual executive producer, Naomi DePere. And, at last, Joe Saltzman, senior digital media writer for CNetNews.com. And next Friday on the program, from the popular Amazon series Patriot, which started second season today, creator executive producer Stephen Conrad. And don't forget, week after next, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, back-to-back-to-back episodes on Thanksgiving week, including on pre-Thanksgiving Day, we will have Megan Oppenheimer, the creator of the Catherine Zeta-Jones starring Facebook Watch series, Queen America. If you came in late on today's program, want to catch up an episode you missed, go to the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. It's www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out the podcast on iTunes, Apple TV, Spreaker's podcast app, and of course, iHeartRadio.com. The views expressed in this program are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and iHeartRadio. Our production associate of BTR is Candace Williams. Andy Toe is Blog Talk Radio's general manager, Jay Sonberg, executive content producer. The co-founders, Alan Levy and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow We Televise is brought to you by Amazon.com and its division, Audible.com. Remember, Audible will transform the way you hear the world. At free audiobook and two Audible Theater Productions, audiblechild.com/televised. But Tomorrow We Televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for having a fantastic weekend. Make it a safe and great one. Back on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio Speaker and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.